Welcome to Wham Bam Tram. Autumn is here. I hope you're keeping warm and active. There's never a better time to walk to work or school in Hong Kong. So what a show we have today. We're in the studio with Dr. Merin Pierce, ecopreneur, former chairman of the Living Islands movement, and a force for environmentalism in Hong Kong. First off, Martin and I will go take a quick look at the news. Right, Martin, I know you saw this news. There was a Gold Coast resident applied to have the no cycling restrictions removed from a bridge down there. And Transport Department replied and said, can't do. It's too dangerous. Cyclists may fall off into the sea. So is this something that happens a lot? Do cyclists fall into the sea?
Well, no, it's never actually been known to happen probably anywhere. But that particular set of excuses, and it goes on, the Transport Department is worried that cyclists will not be able to cope with slopes of 4%, which is quite minor, and will need to stop and rest at the side of the road, and therefore if there's no pavement then they couldn't possibly have anybody cycling past it, like for instance in a 80 meter underpass. But all of these were listed in an internal document that TD generated in 2013 to justify the use of these no cycling signs, because before that, for many decades, their officers have been erecting little no cycling signs around the place without any guidelines whatsoever. I'm not sure which is worse, to be honest, whether having one individual imagining what he thinks cycling might be like, or having an entire department hallucinating what cycling is like.
Right. Now, I was looking into this some more, and you've done a lot of work on this, obviously, but I found that there were promised several years ago that at least 16 of these, or I think there's 340 in the city, these no cycling signs, 16 of these would be replaced or taken away altogether. But we found that only one of those has actually been taken down in the last 2 years, despite promises from Transport Department. So what's happened there?
One of the problems is Transport Department only ever wants to look at and talk about safety as some sort of absolute. There's never an estimate of what benefit there is, what need there is, what demand there is. So, for instance, the roads crossing Gloucester Road, roads like Fleming Road, are vitally important to link one part of Hong Kong to another. The same applies through the Hong Hum area.
And under Tamar Park as well.
Yes, you can't really get these anywhere. Are important yeah. linkages. So if there is some problem, you know, with safety or vehicles, other vehicle speed, then that should be addressed. But on the basis of, we need to do this, how can it happen? Rather than, we don't like it, how can we stop it?
So Martin, are you cycling home?
I certainly am. Yep, I've got the bike, and I shall be getting on a ferry very carefully. Carefully.
Don't fall into the sea, no.
No.
I've heard it can happen.
I've heard it can happen.
Okay, let's go meet Dr. Merin Pierce. He's back off to New Zealand in a couple of weeks after years in Hong Kong. So this is our last chance to catch up with him in person for a while. We'll be talking Lantau, cars, and the future of the environmental movement in Hong Kong. Welcome, Merin, to Wham Bam Tram. Okay, Merin, great to have you.
Well, it's great to be here.
Okay, and so let's start somewhere very familiar to Wham Bam Tram. That's Mu Wo. When we were there last season, and we talk about it a lot, and we talked to Catherine Davis from the Living Islands movement, and I've been out there so many times recently just to see what's going on, and it's depressing how the cars seem to have taken over Mu Wo. And I've only really got into this issue quite recently, but you've been living there for what, 14-15 years, so perhaps you can tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, and it's worthwhile reminding even earlier than that, those that have been there a lot longer are saying that you used to have to get a car permit on Lantau, you had to show that you actually had a car parking spot for it on private land. Unfortunately, that went probably, I don't know, 20, 30 years ago. And now it is a case of, as long as you have a meter to a property there, then you basically can get a vehicle. And so that's resulted in, especially since the new road, remembers, opened up in the last, 8 years, over from Tung Chung. We used to have that really narrow, windy road that was really like going on a theme park ride on a bus or a taxi or a car. Now we've got a wider road and a lot more people are coming over. And people are parking on the street and on the footpath,
yeah,
and in roundabouts and just anywhere they can.
Yeah, I just see them everywhere. So that's an electricity meter, is it? If you have an electricity meter, you can have a car.
Pretty much, because you're renting a property. And so this is some of the fun that goes on in the games of that is the government has said, okay, we're limiting the number of permits, but they're not limiting the number of ding houses that are being built. So, well, they kind of are, but for every three-story building, that's normally three floors with 3 meters. So that's three cars. And then in the fine print, I believe you're allowed to have three vehicles, but you're only allowed to drive one of those per meter. So every new village house being built that's three stories is basically nine cars, possibly. Cars, trucks, vans, or motorbike, they can all go under that same permit pretty much. And then we've, of course, had the home ownership scheme open up, and that's 700 new units. Every one of those is entitled to a car park. And I think there were 16 or 18 car parks built for those 700 units.
Mm.
You just go, wonder why there's becoming a problem.
Yeah. So I see it, you know, through my transport lens, I feel dismayed to see all this parking on the pavement. Is it a big issue within Muwo? Are you guys all talking about it?
Well, basically a lot of the agricultural land now is being turned into parking lots, and they're now driving up what was originally classified as an emergency vehicle access road. And it used to be a gatekeeper to stop people going through there, and only if you had a permit to go up that back road. Now when you go up to like the waterfall in the back of Muwo or Taitaitong, Luketaitong, all of that, there's cars parked everywhere, and even in the passing bays. So it is. And I don't think there's many places in the world where you can park your car all day in a roundabout. But there's a place by the wet market that you'll see three or four cars parked in the roundabout, and the buses are trying to get round it.
Yeah, now I've seen that. And obviously some of the locals with cars I've talked to say, well, we were promised a road. It's our right to have a car. And you can sort of see that. So is it really a government policy problem here?
A combination of many government policies that need to be tidied up. One is, what is their approach to providing parking? What is their approach to enforcing parking legally? And what is the approach to actually the closed road for South Lantau? If we open that up, it's going to be even more chaos, because some people say, we'll just get rid of that. It's like, I don't know if that's really a good plan yet either.
Yeah. On the enforcement, we've been there as well, talking to the police, who sort of turn a blind eye to this. So
it's an interesting one, how the police can actually enforce this, because they're going to get hammered, because people will say, where can I park? You know, if there's not clear rules, then what can the poor police enforce? Yeah. So they're stuck in the middle. And it's unfair to put the blame on the police or the transport. You either have a clear, you've got to have your own car parking spot at where you rent, or there's a certain number, and if you park anywhere else, then you will get fined.
Once
that's made clear, then the police can start enforcing it.
Right. Very interesting, yeah. So another problem is the government's solution to a lack of parking is often to build more parking, which is only going to attract more cars. Is there any resistance to that in Muwo?
Well, it's quite confusing, because I'm not sure, but there's very few government-built car parks in Hong Kong these days. Most of them have been privatised. So we're just going through the Muwo facelift plan number 27, 28. I've lost track in the last 15 years, old time. And there's currently a short-term lease for land that is a car park. They're talking about building a car park, but we don't know if that's going to be government-run, private-run, or a deal for whoever's got the current licensed area. So again, back to good policy, tell us what it is, then we can all as a community know what's coming up, make suggestions that align with that, because why do we need cars parked really close to the ferry pier when most of the transport that people use is either buses, bicycles, or walking? Because most coming in from South Lantau are coming in via bus. So the design, and there's an area at the back of the old school that has been talked about, having a multi-story car park. And you then go, well, why don't you put shops, multi-story car park, offices, and accommodation there? Make it a real multi-purpose building. That sounds like they're going to only build houses there. And if that's the same style as the home ownership scheme, then we're going to lose more car parks than we're going to gain through that.
Now, Muwo, there is some good news. I've been up to see the mountain bike park up there, which is something almost world class, I would say, and quite surprising to see in Hong Kong. It's wonderful.
It is really nice that. There's a bit of a challenge from the environment side. I'm also on Living Island Movement. And there were some people saying, why are you supporting this? They're going to chop down trees. But you get up there and there's these wonderful trails, so many cool things. And as good a tracks, you know, the way they built the tracks are perfect. The way they've designed that is great for the bikers. But then we get back to the fun of how do you get your mountain bike there? So if you're in Tung Chung, do you have to ride over or do you have to hire a private van? Because there's no bikes allowed on the buses. Some places they allow bikes on the front of buses or that. Then you look the other direction with our transport is the ferries. And it's only the slow ferries going to Mui Wo, the freight ferries that allow bikes. There should be part of this new ferries that they're commissioning and getting ordered at the moment should be looking at better ways of getting bikes and other things to help the community like cats and dogs on the ferries. So transporting over to your mountain biking park is still going to be the same travel as going for a walk if you are trying to use public transport.
Yeah. A lot of issues raised just there, Merin. So let's take a step back. Actually, when I went to visit the mountain park, mountain bike park, I have a confession. I was running very late. I was having my brakes fixed in the shop there, the friendly bicycle shop. And they said, well, if you haven't got very long, our man can drive you up there. So I put my bike in the back of a pickup truck, which was the first motor vehicle I think I've been in for some time. And I felt very guilty about that. And he just sort of drove me up there. And I felt guilty because it was a huge truck. But, you know, is that something that would be acceptable to the community as if people are being ferried up there in pickup trucks?
Well, again, it comes down to have the discussion. What's the best option? Should we have someone contract available through some licensing system? Sounds a bit non-South Lantau. We want a bit more freedom than that. But if it's electric vehicle, electric van going up and down, most of the time it's going to be sitting there charging. It could be quite good. It could be a good vehicle like that. Though, if everyone else is then trying to hire a taxi and you can only get one or two bikes in the boot of a taxi rather than six or eight or 10 bikes in a van, we're reducing the number of vehicles going up and down the road.
Yeah.
Biggest issue for cyclists on South Lantau, and I'm meaning cyclists that are road cyclists or mountain biking, you pretty much can only safely ride on the footpath. Of course, there is no berm. There's no side shoulder to the roads and buses struggle to get past. So if you're a cyclist, I've gone with the, let's say, not the official approach, but I'll pay the fine for riding on the footpath if I get caught and save my life and think it's quite good. But there has been talks about getting other cycle tracks along. And the good improvement is now they're actually saying on the catchwater, that is a cycle path. So you can travel all the way along the cycle path using a bike. Again, it's a connectivity for the end of the catchwater down onto the road or up over to Tung Chung. You see people doing that. So, yeah, it's a great opportunity for cycling, just getting on and off your bike at these stupid crossings that they put, even along the waterfront when you're cycling along. There's a pedestrian crossing, and it's actually up to the cyclists to get off their bike to walk across the pedestrian crossing, which is only 1 meter wide. The flow, the way the transport department thinks of flow and what has priority could be a lot different on places like South Lantau and rural areas.
The catchwater, that's interesting. Would that actually be a shared use for bikes and people then, or would there be a separate path built?
Appears to be shared use, which is the wonderful thing, of course. It does mean kids can ride a bike, roller skate, skateboard, run, bike together, push a pram, all of those things, which is some of the things for cycling along the waterfront. Whether on South Lantau or even central Hong Kong, would be great if there was clear lanes that this is mixed use, just get in there. Keep it separate for footpath, separate for cars, but then you can have a mixed use in the middle.
Yeah, and that's great. And that's long, that catchwater, isn't it?
Yeah, it's
unbroken.
Great.
Yeah. Super. Okay. So let's get back to the ferries then, because you raised some great points there. Where to start? There's the new ferries being tendered right now. I've looked at the plans. There's not much bike parking on the ferries.
And it could be easily done. At the moment, they're not providing any racks that I've seen, because all we know, it takes a metal hook up on the ceiling, upside down. You can hook the front wheel on, and all they'd need is a couple of cable ties, or not cable ties, what do you call those, stretchy ties, or that back wheel pulled down, safe. It's not going to shake around at all, because a lot of these bikes, if you haven't gone into a bike shop and looked at these bikes, they're worth the price of many cars for most Landau. So the people don't want their bike to get damaged. So it needs to be, it's not just like stacking $100, $200 bike. These are almost $100,000 bikes some people are riding. Right. And so you got to provide really good space for that. Mm. And again, how can you book if you want to know there's time? There could be a booking system for people, but also have them fined if they don't turn up for that booking.
Okay.
So it means that people can guarantee their spot, because you turn up there and they can say, no more freight space. And you've got 2 hours to wait for the next ferry.
That's right.
There's ways of working out what types of bikes, because you're starting to worry about, well, tricycles and quads and that. And just as a reminder for people out there, if they don't know, in Hong Kong, you only allow one person rather than allowing what you would think. If it's two wheels, you're allowed one. If it's three wheels, you're allowed one. If it's four wheels, you're allowed one. Which is sad.
So which is sad.
X equals one.
Yeah.
And of course, no electric assist.
Yeah.
And no electric assist.
This is another point, yeah. Because I was going to say, the police probably don't often get people on tricycles, do they?
One case I heard was where it was a case where someone was riding the child along. They were on the road on the tricycle. A government vehicle backed into the tricycle and knocked the tricycle over. So the police turn up and go, well, we now have, yes, clearly the car backed in, so we can book those. Now we have the other rules that we have to apply, which is there was two people on a tricycle, and so that poor helper had to go to court for that, and you're thinking of the time and expense to do that. Where in the world are tricycles not allowed? It's some old thing that came in after, I believe, when they had the changeover of, now I've gone and forgotten what
the
they
rickshaws.
Are. The rickshaws changeover. Yeah. Rickshaws change was when it, the rules changed. And it's like, come on, we really do need to look at electrification for our local transport.
Yeah.
So like scooters and bikes, speed limited, particularly on village paths. 20 Ks is way too fast practically anyhow. But to get granny and granddad up the hill, or if you've got a broken leg up the hill in these village areas, electric bike's perfect, rather than having to get one of those village vehicles that's polluting with the noisy little motor blaring away. There's changes there for transport.
Now, let's sort of move then into sort of broader areas, and that's a good place to kick off from, because the electric mobility policy in Hong Kong has stalled. It seems to be going nowhere. We've had some trials. Nothing is happening. And it seems to be, actually, that's what's happening environmentally all over, if I'm not being too pessimistic. You've been here a long time. You're deep into the environmental world here. What would you say is the cause of what this sort of slowness or this sluggish approach that we have in Hong Kong?
Oh, there's so many different parts of that to fit into 2 minutes. I'm guessing I've got to kind of explain it. Comes back to basic town planning and what livable city means. And you've got to go back to that vision about what is a dense city got. We're great with our MTR, that system, and building above the stations. How do we spread that out to allow other things? Because you're not allowed to take your bike with two wheels rolling on the MTR. So again, many people can't commute around. So how do we go back to walkability, running, multi-use in areas, and then bring in, where we can, the solar panels to charge things at stations for the smaller amount of power that a bicycle or a scooter would need. Then you can see that the ideas of highways department becoming a little bit softer than building for a massive truck. Because when they build a bike path, it's only, is it 1 meter wide each lane? So you can't even, as two cyclists, pass safely within your lanes. And we see that out in the Sha Tin area, and we're starting to see that along the waterfront in Mui Wau. It's very dangerous to pull round a bicycle. So they need to make those areas wider and mixed use. So we could have our trikes, our bicycles, our rollerbladers, our skateboarders, our scooters, all using these mixed zones in amongst housing estates,
yeah,
not just in recreational areas.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Now, you're sadly off to New Zealand very shortly. So, I mean, you're an integral part of the Living Islands movement. So, you know, what's going to happen to that now?
Oh, I'm glad there's new committee members stepping up there. And that's for people who don't know, that's a group that's looking at sustainable development on South Lantau and the waters around there. Mm-hmm. The other big thing I've been part of is Green Drink. So I'm really keen that that monthly talk on social and environmental issues is continuing with a new team that's picking up on that as well.
Yeah, I remember those. Well, years ago, they were, you know, fantastic. And I thought that just sort of slowed down a bit, obviously, in COVID, which was a shame. And
it's just different, isn't it, when you're not in person, because it's about the networking and the conversations. And that's what I think can help in this discussion, is bring back events where there's town planning consultation to hear all in one room. What is the transport issue? What is the other issues? So that people can then quickly hear and respond and do it in a dynamic workshop way, which is one of the things that seems to have slowed down in Hong Kong in the last 10, 15 years. There used to be big weekend events around issues. It was one of the groups like Civic Exchange used to run those. I think that's what we're missing in our local community as well.
Yeah, and that's what I loved about Green Drinks, actually. It was usually a presentation, very short. There weren't long, boring presentations, and then a lot of discussion. That's what we need.
And that's definitely what we need all round. I think that's a good point to wrap up, I suppose.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, Marion. Well, all the best. You're going to be very much missed in Hong Kong, but all the best in New Zealand. And I understand that you're still going to be coming back online and through the morning show and other media.
Yeah, as you can imagine, I can't leave this place fully. I'm still going to be very active in keeping things going, because it's all about learning from places like New Zealand with Hong Kong, how we can do things better and different.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks a lot, Marion. Thanks, Marion, and we wish you all the best on your next adventure. Next week, a very exciting landmark for Wham Bam Tram. For the first time, we have a government official coming on the show. That's Assistant Director of the Environmental Protection Department, Dr. Kenneth Long. Kenneth heads up the Air Policy Unit, and we'll be talking about how the government's environmental and transport policies should work together. That's next week on Wham Bam Tram. Have a great week.